The restaurant Maymay, run by chef and co-founded by Irene Lee, was known for its blend of cultural dishes and contemporary tastes, like the Double Awesome. That's a breakfast sandwich on a freshly made scallion pancake. But when Lee closed her restaurant's doors in March of 2020, the future was definitely not clear. By June of that year, she didn't know what her business would evolve into, but she was fairly sure it would not be a restaurant. Well, fast forward 2.5 years, and Maymay's new dumpling factory has officially opened. On Saturday, it set a record for the biggest single day of sales in Maymay's 10-year existence. We caught up with Irene Lee earlier today, and I started by asking her about that milestone.
So we had been kind of softly opening for about a week, but Saturday was the big day. And so we had so many people come through for takeout, to eat in, to get dumplings to take home. And yeah, it's the biggest single day of sales our business has ever had, which feels very auspicious.
Wow, right. Are you surprised?
Yes and no. I mean, I think that coming out of COVID, having a good day of any kind as a business is sort of a surprise. But at the same time, you know, all the folks who came in, I was excited to see them and glad that they made it. And many of them are our supporters for the last decade, not to mention my own mom, who brought about 20 people with her. she's been behind us for much longer than that. So I think, you know, it is a delightful surprise to see that people want to come in and are ready to eat dumplings and Double Awesomes in our space. And at the same time, you know, we have been kind of banking on our community continuing to show up for us.
Why did you decide on dumplings?
Dumplings make people happy, I think. And every culture has a dumpling, you know, some kind of delicious thing wrapped in a delicious thing. And so at Maymay, we like to say dumplings make the world go round. And our experience is that as soon as people hear dumplings, like, they don't need to hear that much more. They're sold.
They want them. Right.
Yes. And we can kind of put anything in a dumpling and get people excited about it. So for us, it's really a vehicle.
Do you have a favorite dumpling, or is that sort of like asking a parent to identify a favorite child?
I definitely have a favorite dumpling, and I have no children, so I don't have to I don't have to make that comparison. But my favorite of our dumplings is probably the cheddar scallion potato, which I like to say is our love letter to the pierogi and the knish, both of which we grew up eating in our Asian American household. And, you know, I think for me, it's really kind of an expression of growing up in New England, growing up in Boston, and also being Chinese. And so putting anything in a dumpling, and cheese definitely plays a big role in our cuisine at Maymay, very non-traditionally Chinese. So I think that dumpling I will just never get sick of. And I think it captures a lot of the spirit of what Maymay is.
And you know, at the factory, people can actually watch the dumplings being made, right?
Yeah, isn't that cool?
It's very cool, especially for someone like me who can't quite get the dumpling technique down. But tell me first why you decided that was something you wanted to include.
Well, Deb, you'll have to come in for a class.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we think all dumplings are beautiful, and it's what's on the inside that counts. So a lot of life lessons in dumpling making. But we had a sort of moment in planning out the future of the business where we had to ask ourselves if we wanted to go to a co-packer, another company that would use our recipes and make our dumplings, or if we wanted to open our own space and really own the production chain from start to finish. And at Maymay, we've always been really committed to trying to tell the full story of food, trying to provide transparency that is meaningful to guests. And so what better way to do that than to have literally a transparent window that shows all of the food being made? And I also just love seeing machinery. I love seeing things in process. And so I got kind of excited thinking like, wow, this might be one of the only dumpling factories that people can actually come to and see the food getting made.
So while I have you on the line, I may get yelled at for asking this, but I'm going to ask you for some personal help with my dumpling technique. I can never get them to seal, right? The ingredients just explode, and I can't get the dough to seal so it stays inside. What's a trick?
Okay. Are you making your dough from scratch? Or are you using grocery store wrappers?
Sometimes grocery store wrappers, I guess mostly.
Okay. Excellent. No shame in that. That's what we did my whole childhood. So there is, I think, a challenge, a tension between putting too much water on the wrapper and putting too little on the wrapper. So we always say you want it to be kind of damp and like tacky, but not sort of dripping wet. And one of the things that I always like to tell people is if you're pan frying your dumplings, it really doesn't matter if they explode. So a pan fry will kind of retain at least some of the shape. And then if your dumplings pop open in the pan, it kind of creates this delicious sauce for the outside of the dumpling. So, you know, I try to look on the bright side of all possible outcomes.
Okay. It's all about the water. I got it. It's been, you know, really a wild couple of years for you. You closed your restaurant in March of 2020, that little global pandemic thing going on. You said publicly just a couple of months later that the business would continue, but probably not as a restaurant. What were you thinking at that time when you were realizing that, you know, you're going to have to make some changes?
Yeah, I'll be really honest. I was in a place personally where I felt like I just built up this company. You know, we just paid off most of our debt. I don't want to go back to the beginning and do it again. If I'm going to keep pouring myself into this project, at least let it be something new. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of sort of evolving the business, pivoting, as some would like to say, that was just on a lot of levels, it was personal. And then we also saw that there was a compelling business case for it. And so those two things really aligned for us.
Right. And a few months into the pandemic, some workers had to be laid off. And you've described that experience as a quote, seven-layer dip of despair. It sounds awful. But now you're on the other side, right? So has your thinking about that changed at all? Would you do anything differently?
That's a great question. I think for me, the challenge of laying folks off several months into the pandemic, after we had worked really hard to keep them employed, to try and kind of find ways to get hours for them. The lesson for me was the more cared for your employees feel, the worse they're going to feel when you can't care for them anymore. And so there is kind of an irony there. But I think for me, I followed the kind of by the book HR policies that any kind of corporate person would dictate. And I don't normally do that. And so in a lot of ways, I felt that the stakes were so high, I didn't want to get anything wrong. But in doing so, I didn't really follow my instinct around what was best for our team. And so I think for me, trusting my gut is one of the things that I am going to take away from this. And continuing to be transparent with workers about how the company is faring, what the future of their jobs are, something I think we're really dialing in right now. Especially with so much change in the business, we have spent a lot of resources on change management, on communicating with every single person, you know, what to expect and what the unexpected might be. So I think those are ways that our business has really grown.
Hmm. Are there any other pandemic lessons that you take with you?
I think we all learned that beautiful food experiences don't have to happen in a restaurant. And I think about my friend Seiji from Cafe Sushi, who is not going to reopen his dining room, but still serves the most beautiful sushi for takeout that you can get in the city. I think about a lot of our colleagues and peers who really got their pop-up going. They transitioned to a product like we did. And I think that the restaurant industry is in this interesting place where we're all trying to figure out how to make it work. And if it looks less like traditional restaurant dining, I think that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, it seems to be a trend. You know, I read shortly before the pandemic, I believe you started opening up your books, if you will, right? And actually showing some of the financial details of running a restaurant. And I read, and I believe this was early 2020, that, because I remember it, your profit for the year was like $20,000. I gulped for you. $20,000, that's it? For the year? Do you think that this transparency is effective? And what does this say about sort of the changing restaurant world? And will you continue to provide that information?
Yeah, so we had been sharing our profit and loss statements with our team for about 2 years, at the point where in very early 2020, we decided to have a public P&L review event. And so we invited about 150 folks. People signed on this technology called Zoom that no one had ever used before. and we walked through our entire profit and loss statement for 2019. And you are correct that we showed about 2.2% profit, which was about $20,000. And I think that we absolutely plan to continue this kind of transparency. And what's really exciting is we are seeing other folks in the industry following that principle, because the economy is such that we as the industry can no longer absorb all of the increased costs. And so you've seen, you know, kind of leading chefs sharing that their fryer oil cost X in 2020, and now it costs 3X. And that is why, you know, the price of chicken wings is going up. So I think that we are having this moment where we really need guests to understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. And we can do that in a kind of one-off way where we shout about different tidbits, or we can be really intentional about making sure guests understand more holistically what it means to dine in a restaurant. And that has always really been Maymay's approach.
Mm. Now, last year, you know, after going through a lot of turmoil, you won a James Beard Award for leadership. Do you remember getting the award? And what did that mean to you after all of this?
I was really speechless when I got the phone call. And, you know, I had been very, very honored to be nominated for a Chef Award, which is a totally different category, several years in a row. But to me, leadership felt like, in a lot of ways, like the first and the last thing that I was eligible for. I had been through so much self-doubt during the pandemic. I knew that I wanted to make my team proud. And that is why we took on emergency feeding, why we created Project Restore Us. And I think in a way, that's what leadership is all about, is creating an environment, creating a business that people can be really proud to engage with. And so it was a huge honor. And we're super grateful for the platform that that's continued to provide to us as we sort of try to push the industry forward.
And you're now working on a digital tool to help restaurants. You won't be involved so much in the day-to-day operations of the dumpling factory, but you'll be working on this. Well, can you explain that a little bit? And why did you decide to make the change?
PrepShift is our new kind of tech-enabled consulting company. I run that with Dylan Gully and Carla Cornejo. Carla was part of the Maymay team during COVID. And we really are invested in having a vibrant, diverse, equitable restaurant industry in the future, so that when I'm old, I have cool stuff to eat. So we are working to take some of the best practices that we know in the industry, some that we developed at Maymay, and to leverage those for businesses that might not traditionally be able to afford consulting. We're working through the state of Massachusetts, the Workforce Training Fund, and we also are trying really hard to build more productive and healthy relationships between operators and their team. And of course, open book management and kind of intentional transparency is part of that as well. So I really feel that it's about paying forward the lessons that I've learned and wanting to make sure that, you know, when I'm old, it's not all just chains and the kind of top 50 restaurants. It's been so cool to see Boston's restaurant community become more diverse. And I really want us to continue on that trajectory.
Right. And so you mentioned those classes, those dumpling classes. I think I definitely have to take one. If I do, you're going to show me the water technique.
Of course,
to seal them. But can you tell me a little bit about what these classes are?
The dumpling classes are kind of one of my favorite things that we do. We started these prior to the pandemic. We took them virtual for the duration of the pandemic. And now that we're back in our space, we can invite people in again. The classes are kind of inspired by some of our favorite childhood memories. Growing up in Boston for Lunar New Year, our parents would invite all of the friends and neighbors over. We'd all sit around the kitchen table with a big bowl of dumpling filling in the middle, and we would all make dumplings, eat dumplings, and take frozen dumplings home with us. So we think those are skills that anyone can learn. And there's just something so special about sitting around that table and creating something with people you love. So we want to spread the kind of dumpling cheer and the dumpling love with our community. And the classes are the number one way that we can do that.
That's Irene Lee, chef and co-founder of Maymay. She'll be appearing as part of the WBUR City Space Curated Cuisine Series on Monday, February 6th. You can find more information about that on our website, radioboston.org.